Welcome to the Emerging Minds Families Podcast.
Hi, you're with Nicole Rohlbush. On today's episode, I'm joined again by Rich Stevens, President of the Stuttering Association for the Young Australia, or SAY Australia, and Mitchell, who's been involved with SAY Australia for the last 4 years, first as a participant and now as a mentor to other children and young people. Both Rich and Mitchell have a stutter, and they've joined us again to talk more about what it's like growing up with a stutter, how it can impact children's mental health, and what people can do to best support children who have a stutter. Thank you both for joining me again to continue this conversation. Now, Rich, you did touch on this a little bit before, but I'm really interested in, from both of you, about the language and labels that might be around people who have a stutter, and also some of the things that people do that are actually really unhelpful.
Yeah, probably the worst thing is, like, you're trying to have a conversation with these new people, like, or close one to, you know, and you're trying to get the word out, but you can't, and they, like, try to finish your word or sentence. That's a big no-no, so... But for me, I've always had in school, like, people walk off, people not pay attention. So I just don't really care for those people who don't really want to respect to me. Right? So, but the good thing to do is if you even ever met a person who stutter or anything and they're trying to, like, talk to you, just, like, listen to them, just let them talk, be nice, be friendly. So, yeah.
Yeah, I remember as a kid, you know, I'd hear a lot, a description of my stutter was, like, bad, worse, I needed to be fixed. So there's lots of negative connotations with that and stuff. So if I'm talking and it's described as bad, and then obviously I'm going to take that and I'm going to think, okay, so if I'm talking now and if I have a stutter and I know it's bad, then I know I need to stop that. I know if I do that, it's not accepted around me and stuff. So I have to stop that, or else I'm bad. And it's a weird thing to say, but, like, if you're a child, you know, these things stick. These things really, really stick. And those are a couple of examples. I think labeling, I think I was always thought of as anxious. Like, anxiety is not a cause. It can exacerbate. I was never shy, though, but that's a false impression you get, because I wasn't shy, I wanted to speak, but didn't want to speak as well because I didn't know what the reaction was going to be from other people. You hear a lot, I heard a lot as well as a kid, oh, it's fine, you'll grow out of it. And even if you think of that, and I know I'm being a bit pedantic here, but so if I continue with a stutter, does that mean I've not grown up then? I know it's a pedantic thing, but kind of words and language are just so important at such an early age. So I never use, like, and when I talk about mine, I just say strong or not as strong, with reference to like, and to my stuttering and stuff. I know everybody's kind of different, but I think anything which you can say, because as soon as it comes out your mouth, it can never come back. And I think as kids, those things stick. So I think anything which I believe, which has a negative connotation, we really need to kind of stop, really, because those things will just be embedded in the child.
Yeah, definitely. I think that hearing that lived experience is so important for language and attitudes to change, and just how powerful those things can be in terms of the meaning that you make from your interactions with people, whether it's, you know, outright saying bad or something like that, or the finishing of sentences or words, or just walking away, and what that sense making is from that, when, especially like you say, when you're a really young kid and you don't know what to make sense of. So, yeah, really important side of things, language and attitudes. And I wanted to ask you what the current treatment options are around stuttering.
Yeah, sure. So I think from an early age, what SLPs will tend to do is kind of work with the parents on, you know, in terms of the home environment and stuff, and in terms of how they communicate to their child. They will look at just other and kind of pressures in the home environment and stuff. You know, is there protected time where communication can kind of happen? And there's sometimes as well where the parents are trained by an SLP to deliver the program at home. And you've got like a range of other programs where they tend to try to and kind of work on the speech, to modify the speech, to do the rhythmic approach. There's lots of tricks out there which might have been used in the past, which I don't think you use now. But there's lots of fluency inducing techniques. So if you talk to a beat with a word or the syllable times, that can invoke a lot like a fluency. So there's the modification of speech, which at times it's always a bit of a trade-off, especially when you get like a bit older as well. There's the cognitive behavioral therapy, which is kind of working on kind of thoughts and feelings around your relationship with having a stutter. There's breathing techniques, the coastal breathing, where you talk on your out breath. So there's lots out there. Yeah, I would always advise anyone who's on the lookout for like any therapy or like groups or organizations, just to research it, you know, and to have a look. To have a look at the evidence, how it was done, who did it, and to make the choice to make the choice that you were comfortable with and happy with. And I also think as well, like, I think SLPs have a responsibility now to not just to prescribe a single thing to families and to kids who come in and stuff. I think if I was an SLP now, I don't think I'd be spending the first week or 2 or 3 weeks prescribing a therapy and stuff. I'd let the family or the child or the adult tell their story and provide them with the evidence base, provide them with what is out there, and for them to make an informed choice.
And Mitch, what about for you and your experience of seeing a speech pathologist? Can you tell us a little bit about the types of treatment that you've experienced and what it was like to go through those processes with your speech?
Yes. So in primary school, same as Rich, I don't, like, I've got a vivid memory of it. So probably in, like, grade 1 to grade 4, I did speech therapy in primary school. That was like just like talking to like some speech pathologists that they actually had at the school, and she was awesome for me through those times. Like just like talking to someone without being like walked off on or anything like that. So what I did was like just play games. Like that's the memory I've got, just playing games and just sitting down and having a chat with her. Mm-hmm. Then my mum was finding it really hard to try and find a speech pathologist, because something along the lines of, like, I'm pretty sure past the age of 13 or 14, it's hard for like speech pathologists don't do kids over a certain age. So I'm pretty sure it's either 13 or 14, maybe, if I'm right. So yeah, mum was always on the phone with the, always on the phone emailing speech pathologist clinics, trying to call, because yeah, at this time in high school, I wanted my stutter to be fixed, because I was just at that low point, so just trying to get it fixed, trying to get it away pretty much. So we ended up finding one in Box Hill when I was 14 or 15, and I did that for 2 years of just constant, like, smooth speech, just like trying to talk smoothly and without stuttering at all. So I did that for about 2 years. And then also he wanted me to do, like, try and take the smooth speech to, like, the real world, like, to footy, to school, talking to my parents and extended family members. And then, yeah, I just found that really exhausting and overwhelming. I would always come home to, like, completely tired from school, and, like, just, like, talking with my mates, just trying to talk smoothly. And then even after there's, like, school hours, as soon as I go home, I would just go in my room and constantly read books, articles, just, like, trying to be as smooth as I could be. But yeah, that was just too exhausting. I would always, like, go to bed at, like, 6 p.m. wake up for school and be, like, completely tired, and that was a really draining. So when I was 16, I was like, I told my parents, I'm like, no, I can't keep doing this because it's too much.
Yeah, I think that's something that a lot of people wouldn't think about, is just how tiring it can be to have to think about speaking.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it's not really something people think about, like, how exhausting it is. And I just remember, like, my guru, our parents always trying to tell me and find all these articles on smooth speech. They mean all at all, and I was always like, oh, I, like, can't keep finding new ways to, like, talk and that, because it's just too tiring, so.
Yeah, yeah. You've touched on a couple of things already, Mitch, but what are some of the helpful things that people around you have been able to do for you?
Yes, just with my guru, parents are trying to find articles and all that. That was a sign of, like, yeah, they're really, really kind and loving and supportive. And then my parents and my sister have been awesome and amazing, and I can't thank them and for how helpful they've been, because, like, yeah, meeting new people in social situations, can't get one name out, so like, they know. So we have, like, this, so if I'm, like, for example, if we have had them met before, and then you introduce yourself, Then I try to introduce myself. I would like a look to them, and then they would tell me their name for me. So, yeah, that's really good. And then, yeah, I can't think on the top of my head how much other things they've done to help me, because it's been a lot. And at school as well, like my mates, even at school, like with roll calls, trying to say I'm here, I would always get blocks, or I couldn't even say I'm here to mark me present. So I would ask them to say, "Can you please just say I'm here?" And then they'll be like, "Yeah, sure." So that was, really awesome for me. Even teachers as well, like my English teachers, because we always had to do like presentations in high school and whatnot, because that's a criteria that you have to pass, being able to presentate and talk. So all of my English teachers were awesome in the space where I don't have to talk in front of the kids. I could do it at lunchtime, so that was awesome. And if I wanted to, because I'm pretty sure in like year 9 or year 10, I had to have at least 4 or 5 kids in my class be there. So I had a few of my friends just sit in the room so they could tick me off. So, yeah. So thank God I didn't have to talk as much in front of the classroom. But, yeah, that's all what I had to do to the past school. So, yeah.
And Rich, I think you mentioned a bit of this in your introduction, but I'm really interested in hearing a bit more about what Say Australia brings to children and young people who stutter, particularly about the impact that your program can have on their well-being.
Yeah, so we provide an adjunct. It's a pure adjunct. It's not, it's not a replacement for any therapy that is currently ongoing for like any young people who comes into our world. The essence of what we provide is a safe space where like the kids and teens who stutter can just come exactly how they are. The only ask is that we ask them to bring them, and that is the only ask. We provide a space which is, a lot of love, a lot of empathy, a lot of understanding, acceptance, lots of listening, which I think is key. And we do so in an environment which is fun, and they can show their uniqueness in this space where they won't be bullied, they won't be told to speak a certain way, they won't be told that they have to accept their stutter as well. But what they will see is that they are seen and heard and loved for exactly how they are, and they are allowed to be kids. And I think that is the beauty of what we try and do and stuff. We just want to provide a space where they can be kids. So over the course of 10 weeks, they get to work in small groups, and they create a unique piece. And if that's a song or a spoken word or a play. And then at the end, if they want to share what they have created, and they are totally in charge of what they create. And then at the end of the program, they get a chance, if they want to share their piece in front of an audience filled with family and friends, in an auditorium or a theatre space, or like if we do it online as well, because we do this interstate in the Zoomosphere, as I like to call it. We will do a show in the Zoomosphere as well. But kind of when they share, they have as much time as they want, and everyone is just there, not concerned about how they speak, but just really interested in what they have to say. So we do that all year round, and we do the social hangs every month, or yeah. So all of those things are free. Our programming is free. The social hangs are free. The only thing that we do charge for, but we try and help families as much as possible, obviously, is we do a summer camp here in Victoria, up in Creswick. Not a fluency camp, not an acceptance camp, just a camp. It's really kind of special. There's a magical, you know, essence, a magical time that we have when we are with our community for like 4 or 5 days, and we get to know each other a lot, you know, in the camp environment. So yeah, so we do all these arms and it's great, but the essence and the core of it is just providing that safe space for kids and teens who stutter to just come, to be themselves, to meet other kids and teens who stutter. So for a lot of the kids, it's the first time when they come into our space that they've met anyone else who has a stutter. And hopefully, you know, kind of building on their kind of confidence and the self-esteem, and for them to see that, yes, as a person who has a stutter, you can do all these things in life and you can be an effective communicator as a person who stutters. So yeah, as I said, you know, as I said, we're not a replacement for any therapy. We're purely an adjunct to coexist.
Yeah, and I love the simplicity of that message of just be yourself in this space. Yeah. Well, Mitch, I wanted to ask you about your experience of Say Australia. Tell us a bit about that and maybe like what's been the best part of it.
So every single time when I think of Say, I always was Australia, I always think of my very first day being anxious, being scared, being too frightened as seeing rich. So my first day, me and my family arrived and I was sitting on the seat, and as soon as I heard the door open, I absolutely bolted to the toilet. So I was like, no, nah, I'm not doing this at all. My youngest sister, she walked over to where I was, and then she helped me calm down a bit. So as soon as I walked in, I saw all of the lovely volunteers, their awesome smiles, their energy, and then ever since then I've not looked back. It's just a place where you can be yourself without being judged by anyone, not being interrupted. It's just always a friendly environment. There's never been any issues at all. It's just always, yeah, just amazing, sir. It's awesome to be a part of.
I remember that day well. I remember that day, and it was the first ever program that we did. I remember when you were nervous and when you went to the toilet for a bit, and then you come in, and I didn't know if you were going to stay. And then we played a game, and you did this great share with your dad and stuff, and had a big embrace, and then yeah, and then we took a break because it was a very emotive. It was not that kind of game, and you just shared this beautiful share with your dad, and then we took a break, and I didn't know if you were going to come back, and you stayed for that day, and it's just been beautiful ever since. And it's like I say, you know, in terms of Mitchell, is he's a person who's been through the programs. He's been through the programs. He came to our first one. You know, he graduated as an alumni, and he's come back as a mentor. He was a bunk counsellor to the youngest boys, which is always a hard age group, and especially at your age and stuff, and there's a maturity in that, and just a grace and just a care, and you've shown. And I think what kind of better story for someone who's been through it, you know, for someone who's been through our programs? Yeah, because I lead the organization, other staff have been involved, but there's no one who's been through it. So your story, your insight
is so unique. And as well, we ask a lot of our kids, you know, in the, you know, in terms of we ask them to take a risk, as in to get on stage as well. I also ask that of the staff as well, because we never ask the kids to do anything that we are not, that we don't and want to volunteer for as well. So a couple of days ago, I knew you were on the stage in a packed auditorium with a tambourine and stuff as a backup singer, you know, so, and you volunteered to do that and just a number of things as well on camp. And that, and I think that is, again, it's a beauty of what our space is. It's a healing thing for the both of us as well. You know, as people who stutter, like to be around those kids, but to be around the staff as well, you know, our team. And we have like a number of our team who do have a stutter, who are adults, and we have a number of people who don't, who are allies, who give us as much time as we need as well. And that's important for the, like, and for the kids to see, because if the kids only came to a space where it was led by adults who stutter, it's great still, but like it's, it, I'd say in our space you'd expect to have as much time because that's a tagline and stuff like that. But when there's people in there who don't have a stutter as well, who maybe they have never experienced in life in the sense of, oh, for people who are fluent, don't give me time. That's very important, and it's powerful to see as well. So yeah, we ask the kids to take a risk, and the staff as well. And as I said, it's a healing thing, a rejuvenation for all of us, and it's a special place.
Yeah, sounds like it. And for you, Mitchell, what's been one of the favourite things that you've done? So Rich mentioned you've been a backup singer with a tambourine. Yep. What's been your most favourite thing?
Oh, well, there's too many to choose. But, well, a little bit a while ago, probably 2 or 3 years ago, Rich was telling me about this idea of camp and all that, and I was like really excited by it because we saw, well, in one of the presentation nights, we saw this movie called My Beautiful Stutter, and it was about this camp in America with these kids who stutter and all of the volunteers over there, and just like made a movie about their journeys, their experience, and then the camp as well. So as soon as Rich gave me that idea of about the possibility of camp, and then to see that 6 months ago come to reality, it was just an amazing feeling. It'll be in all of our hearts and in our memories for many years to come. So, yeah, that's probably my favourite thing.
Well, I'm glad you've felt comfortable sharing your experience, because it's been a pleasure listening to it. And I wonder what you would say to other kids who are growing up with a stutter. What advice would you give them?
Just be real, authentic self. That's all what I have to say. Like, just be who you are. Just if people don't have the time to talk to you or listen what you have to say, just don't associate with those people who like don't care for what you have to say or anything. So just try and find people who are really nice, and actually want to get to know who you are, and then just work for them there. So
yeah, it's good advice. So we've come to the end of our time together, but is there anything either of you would like to add before we go?
Oh, I always like to end on just an easy thing, really, and stuff. I think, I think if there's a take home after this and stuff, I think the easiest, the soundbite to take away is the only difference between people who stutter and people who don't is that for people who stutter, when they speak, it just takes them a bit of a little bit longer to say the words that they want to say. And that's it. And that is it. And it's just about time. It's just about space. And it's about kind of patience. And that is the only and kind of difference in communication and stuff. So like if it's today or tomorrow or like in a week's time or a month's time, if anybody comes into your world who has a stutter, if you remember it, and all you need to know is that I just need to give time and space and for this person, you'll really make their day. Because I know when I didn't get that, and then when I did get that, that was the difference between having a terrible day and thinking about it for days and days on end, against the opposite of just walking away and just thinking that was a cool engagement and stuff, and just walking on and going on with life and with a smile on my face.
Well, Rich and Mitchell, it's been a real pleasure to have you here today. I've learned a lot, so thank you for sharing your experiences with me. I really appreciate it.
It's been a pleasure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we felt heard. So thank you. Thank you. It's been awesome.
Yes, thank you. Yes, very much for sharing about what Rich and myself have got to say today. And so thank you for letting us be heard.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Visit our website at www.emergingminds.com.au/families for a wide range of free information and resources to help support child and family mental health. Emerging Minds leads the National Workforce Centre for Child Mental Health. The centre is funded by the Australian Government Department of Health under the National Support for Child and Youth Mental Health Program.